It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge Podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. The football season is coming, and there's no better place to start making every moment more than with FanDuel. I just downloaded the FanDuel app a couple of months ago when it became legal in New York, and I have been having a blast with it. You guys know I'm a big boxing guy. I've been trying to make you all rich with some of these picks, but I've been betting on them. I've been hitting, and I've been enjoying my time with the FanDuel Sportsbook app. They have great odds and markets for the NFL and college football futures, the MLB, PGA Tour, tennis, boxing, and so much more. Awesome new and existing user promotions. It is America's number one sportsbook. It's easy to use, safe and secure. You get your winnings fast, which I know matters to everybody. It's fun to combine multiple bets from the same game into a same game parlay, and you can discover the most popular SGPs each day right when you log in. If you are new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started now. Sign up with the promo code BOXING so they know I sent you. Promo code BOXING so they know I sent you.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
So glad you could squeeze me in to this podcast.
Hey, listen, it was between you and a pedicure, so I decided you.
How many times a week do you get a pedicure? A month to get a pedicure?
Not often. Not as much as I should.
I say this all the time, Sergio Mora. Back again, DAZN broadcaster, former junior middleweight champion. But for someone that grew up with nothing, you like the finer things more than anyone I know.
Bougie Mexican, started from the bottom. Now I'm here.
Yeah. For context here, I asked Sergio to do this podcast in person. I'm in Southern California this week, and I get a response from him that sounded a little something like this.
All right, Mannix, I'm squeezing your podcast, but I got a busy day, bro. Busy day. You know, I'm day trading right now. Market's doing well, so, you know, I can actually allow a little bike ride right now around the neighborhood. But I got to wash my Jeep. You know, got to hit some golf balls because my game's kind of suffering. But, yeah, I'll squeeze in your podcast, 3 p.m. I will be there prepared. But, yeah, you're just throwing something else on my already full list. You know, I got a laundry list of a lot of hobbies I got to take care of. You're lucky you're paying me for this.
Your idea of a busy day is bike riding, car washing, and golf ball hitting.
And day trading. We got to make money. And today was a good day in the market, baby. Great day in the market.
You don't check the market every day.
I check it every day because I'm a part-time day trader, Mannix, okay? Hashtag Apple, hashtag Marriott, hashtag Costco. These are all my stocks and doing well.
I'm glad you're doing well. All right. A lot to get into on this podcast. A lot of news this week to touch on. But first, Sergio, I want to look back to last week when we were both ringside in Fort Worth, Texas. Virgil Ortiz picks up his 19th win, collects his 19th knockout, sees the ninth round for the first time in his career, albeit only for a couple of seconds, against Michael McKinson. He now wins and moves on. What did you think of Virgil Ortiz's performance coming after a one-year layoff with a new voice in his corner in Manny Robles?
First, we got to give McKinson some credit because, look, we knew that he didn't have enough to win, but he showed heart. He showed grit. He was trying to find a way to make it difficult and ugly for Virgil, and he kind of did, but he wasn't winning rounds. And that's what we talked about in our last podcast is how is he going to win rounds, or is he going to be able to win rounds? And obviously the question was no. He was just able to, you know, really show courage, heart, and, you know, go more rounds than anyone else did. But I just think Virgil Ortiz, with his new team, he's molding nicely, Mannix. He's molding nicely into the same killer he was. I would like to see more jabs. I would like to see less voices in the corner. You know, there was his father, as Manny Robles. There was like three voices in his corner. But that's all the things that you need to work on with chemistry, and they will. But whether he looked impressive or not, absolutely. But that's what happens when you transition from your day one to someone new. You have to build that chemistry. And that's what they're doing with Manny Robles. And it shouldn't take, you know, more than two or three fights. Just like with Ryan Garcia, you know, with Goosen. It only took two fights to see Ryan Garcia, and it's back to his old ways.
Yeah, one thing I learned in that fight is that Virgil Ortiz Sr. is the head trainer of that operation. Even though you're right, there were a lot of voices talking in that corner, it was pretty clear that Virgil Sr. was the head guy. You bring in Manny Robles, he's there to help. You have a couple other voices there, but Virgil Sr. is the head trainer, or probably will be the head trainer moving forward, which is fine. He trained his son all the way up until the union with Robert Garcia. Now that Robert Garcia is out, Virgil Sr. is going to be taking the lead role with Virgil Jr. And I don't know. I thought he had a good game plan going in. Even Virgil in the ring was telling me, like, my father had the right game plan. I was just not listening to it. He was out there trying to headhunt Michael McKinson. And McKinson is very difficult to beat that way because he's slippery. He's got a decent chin. He knows how to avoid and how to tie up. The body was where Virgil needed to go. And then towards the end of that eighth round, he just hits McKinson with a picture-perfect shot right on the hip. Is that legal, by the way? Is the hip considered legal?
If the referee's on the right-hand side and you do it on the left-hand side, it's totally legal. He didn't see it. Bernard Hopkins used to do that all the time. But technically, no, it's not legal.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
But there's a lot of things you can do when the referee's on the other side. And we get away with it all the time. If he doesn't see it, we got away with it.
I mean, that was clearly, it was considered a body shot, but it was a hip shot because
referee didn't see it.
No, it was a body shot. And I agree. Look, you do whatever you can do within the bounds of the game. But I thought it was crazy that Virgil hit McKinson with a shot in the end of the eighth round. And then at the start of the ninth, hits him literally in the exact same spot that just crumples him down to the canvas once again. I think if Virgil had not hit him in that spot, McKinson might have been able to survive maybe the distance of that fight. Only four rounds to go. He looked like he was in good condition. I just think Virgil, to his credit, went out there, looked for that exact same shot, and landed it. So good for him. That showed growth and I think an ability to follow the game plan that his father and his team set out.
And he still got the knockout.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's still, you know, our 100% knockout ratio is still intact. And even though he says and acts like it doesn't matter to him, it does matter because it looks great on his resume and it looks great promoting the next fight. Only him and Beterbiev, two boxers in the whole world, are the only ones with 100% knockout ratio. Well, two boxers that actually are, you know, contenders and champions. That's impressive. So to keep that, that's how you market your next fight. And by marketing and keeping that 100% knockout ratio, you know, you get more money. You can demand more on the negotiating table. So that's a great thing to have on your belt. As far as Virgil Sr. goes, I'm a big fan of his because, you know, mostly, you know how I feel about fathers training their sons. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. I do not like it for many, many reasons. I've seen so many relationships spoiled over boxing and I don't like it. But, you know, Virgil does a great job of being the alpha, being the man, being the father, but then allowing someone else to get involved and do the training as well. Kind of like Devin Haney's father does. You know, I think, you know, Devin Haney's father does the exact same thing. He goes to whatever boxing trainer is going to bring out the best to his son, and it's everywhere around the country. I don't care who the voice is, but I'm the man. I'm the voice. You're going to give the game plan. You're going to train my son, but come fight night, it's my voice or the highway. And I think that's where I think Virgil Sr. should have, you know, planned with Manny. But these are all things they're going to work on the next time around. And you can bet they're going to iron those out and they're going to come stronger the next time.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So let's talk about the next time. Right now, Virgil Ortiz is the number one contender for the belt held by Terrence Crawford. As we record this, there are reports that the Crawford-Spence fight is getting close. It's not there yet, but let's just say hypothetically that Crawford-Spence falls apart over money at the 11th hour and the WBO orders Virgil Ortiz against Terrence Crawford. What would you do if you're Virgil Ortiz?
Well, I would. Virgil Ortiz is so ambitious. He wants to fight Bud Crawford. I mean, he's stubborn about that. And I'm sure he'll fight Errol Spence. You know, and that fight will be a huge fight in Texas, in Dallas. It's just, I would advise him not to. I would need to talk to his manager, Rick Merigian. He'll tell you exactly what I'm telling you. No, not ready. Unless it's a obscene amount of money where we can't turn down, then of course we're going to take the fight because this is prize fighting after all. But if it's just going to be, you know, a $1.2 million fight, you know, one point something, I don't think it's worth it because, you know, you're going to be able to make that really fast, and it's going to grow exponentially without Crawford, without Spence, without a blemish on your record. So I say steer clear of those names. Even though you are chasing greatness, you're not ready for those names. It'll look exactly like when Canelo stepped up to fight Mayweather. He got his first blemish, but he got a $10 million payday out of it. So it was worth it. Now, if Virgil Ortiz is going to get a $10 million payday, I'll sign the contract right now. But
it's,
you
not going to be $10 million.
But we know it's not even going right to be five.
But doesn't, like, you know, you mentioned Canelo and Mayweather. One thing Eddie Reynoso has said, and Canelo has said after that, is that they're better off as a fighter from taking that fight. They learned something from that fight. They were humbled by that fight. Same thing can happen to Virgil Ortiz. And Sergio, you and I both know, if the WBO orders it and it goes to purse bid, like, Virgil's taking that fight.
How about, like, if he gets knocked out? How about if he gets physically beat down?
That's the price. That's the way it goes.
No, that's not how you learn. You don't learn through a beating. You learn through a 12-round decision loss. Sergio, that's what Canelo did.
You go back and look at, like, no, man, look at the 1980s. Look at that.
One beat down can change the trajectory of your career. You don't want that beat down to be gambling for what if. Now, if you can guarantee me that Virgil Ortiz goes a distance with Crawford and Errol Spence, I say take the fight. But this is boxing, where you're one fight, one loss away, one punch away from your career going the wrong way.
Yeah, but if Virgil Ortiz is not ready for Terrence Crawford now, when is he going to be? He faced all the gatekeepers, Sergio.
It's not his job.
He faced Agus Kavalauskas. He faced Michael McKinson. He has faced every B-level fighter potentially.
Good for him, but it's not his job to be facing Crawford. It's Spence's job to be facing Crawford. That's what the public demands. That's the number one fight to be made in boxing.
Okay, Virgil, I agree.
Look, Virgil Ortiz, if he's able to do this and bite more than he can chew, that just shows how much balls he has. It's not his job to be calling out Crawford and Spence. That just shows you the audacity and the ambition that this young man has.
This is why we did this on Jabs over on DAZN, and I'll do it again.
But it upsets
me. Hold on, I'm not talking about you.
You just don't understand.
No, I do understand. You know why I understand? Because after you beat Vernon Forrest, what was your message to the crowd right then? Who did you call up? Oscar De La Hoya.
Right.
Who at that point was still one of the best in boxing. Was an all-time.
And I didn't get it.
And you didn't get it, but you called him out. So you called him out. Why is it different? Why is it okay for you to call it Oscar De La Hoya and Virgil Ortiz not to call it Terrence Crawford? Terrence Crawford's 34. He's not 28. He's not in the middle of the prime of his career. He's 34 years old, and he got touched in his last fight against Kavalauskas. Got touched in that fight.
I was 28 years old, and I was in a different position.
Virgil's what, 25?
Like 24.
All right.
And he just turned 24 at that. But he has power, and he has star potential. My star was already kind of like running out of shine.
Your star was burned out.
Well, I was about to supernova, Maddox. You know what that means?
Yes.
All right. So yeah, I was a big red giant at that time, and I was about to explode. But anyway, he's a little young star. He has a future ahead of him, and a lot of you know, money to be made. And I just think he's going to take a step backwards fighting one of these guys. And then forget about losing? How about if he loses badly or a beatdown? You don't come back from those. You know, there's so many fighters that have left so much money on the table, but with one bad loss. Even though they got back to the top, won a championship, made some good money, they still weren't the same if they would have actually made the right decision early in their career. Kell Brook is a great example. He bit off more than he can chew to step up to fight Golovkin, something he didn't have to do. But where did his career go from there? He went from undefeated, knocking people out. He left so much on the table, striving for greatness. I just don't think it's a good idea. Virgil shouldn't do it.
Okay. In 1981... Tommy Hearns, who I think was in his early 20s, took a pretty good beatdown from Sugar Ray Leonard. He bounced back. That was for the welterweight title. He went on to win titles at 54.
A fight that he was winning.
Okay, but he took a beatdown at the end.
No, one round. He was winning that fight.
At the end.
In the 14th round.
Okay. All right, how about
this? He was winning before that, so that wasn't a beatdown.
How about this? 1985, the same Tommy Hearns fights Marvin Hagler. You want to call that not a beatdown?
It was out of his range, out of his weight class. And Hagler, for God's sake, okay. One of the greatest middleweight in all
time. But he went on to win a light heavyweight title after that.
Versus who?
His career.
Please.
Dennis Andres.
Exactly. Forget it.
But then he fought Aaron Barguil, lost that fight, fought Ray Leonard again. Look, they were saying the careers don't end after one tough
loss. Out of the four kings, why is Hearns always the one that people mention last? It's always Hagler. It's always Leonard.
Ray,
it's always Duran.
It's Ray
and
up here.
And it's Hearn.
It's not. It's Ray up here.
Sadly.
And then it's Ray's above everybody else. The other three are kind of blumped
in
the same mix.
It's Duran. It's Duran and Leonard. And then after that, it's Hagler.
Although Duran, you know, he came back after Ray beat his, Nomas.
Yeah, but Duran was just special, you know.
So what you're saying is Virgil's not special, is what you're saying?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
All right. Well, look, if there's any luck, we'll get Virgil versus, say, David Avanesian. I think that's a good fight for him next, because that would mean Spence and Crawford.
And it'll be a great fight for the fans. That would be a physical fight. Yes.
That's a rock'em sock'em robot.
That's the type of fight where that puts you on the next level, where you might be ready for the bigger names, but Avanesian's dangerous.
I agree. All right, let's look ahead to this weekend. On Saturday, Teofimo Lopez makes his return to the ring. He will be moving up to 140 pounds to fight Pedro Campa. Lopez was last seen in the ring against George Kambosos last November. Lost a decision. Was it unanimous? I think it was unanimous. Lost a unanimous decision. In the aftermath of that, he dealt with some medical issues. He dealt with a broken hand. Now he's back in the ring at 140. The takeover, Sergio, has become the take back. What are your expectations for Lopez at 140 pounds?
I want to say it was a split decision, but either way, yes, it was a clear loss. And I love this move, because we know that he was a big 135 pounder, the biggest 135 pounder I've ever seen, by the way, in Teofimo Lopez. And, he knows what it's like to have overnight success. Your life changes. Everyone wants your picture, knows your name. You get the big money, and then you have another loss, and you get everything taken away from you. He's popular enough. He's still great enough to do something big at 140, and he has the size to do it at 140, and he has monsters at the 140 division. You got Taylor, you got Prograis, you got Tank, you got Garcia. I mean, that's going to be the next popular decision, you know, from the lightweights. Now it's going to be 140, so he's going to be fit in nicely at 140, where, you know, there's going to be a lot of money on the table, and he's going to be happy that he doesn't have to shed down that weight. His size still going to be, he's still going to be big enough, but he's not going to be shedding those extra pounds. A lot of money be made, man. And if he has his head right, like he says his head is right, he's going to be probably the name I would favor over all of them. But his head has to be right. His camp has to be right. And his training, of course, because, you don't want these injuries. You don't want these sicknesses that he went into the ring with that he said he had issues with. And, of course, his father, you know, is a wild card. So maybe if they can bring someone else in that can even that out, I think he has a bright future ahead of him.
Now, I think the mental part of it is the most important part of Teofimo Lopez's career to this point. Sergio, you were around him like I was during the Kambosos week. That was not the Teofimo Lopez we had become used to. The confidence, and it was still kind of there, but you knew he was having problems getting down to 135 pounds. He was very open about the issues with his former wife. He had just had a baby who he hadn't seen. Like, there was so much going on that I can't imagine being mentally prepared to go to war against a guy like Kambosos, who looked at that fight as win or go home. It was do or die for George Kambosos. So I'm of the belief that if Teofimo Lopez is right mentally, if he's right physically, he can very quickly become the best guy at 140. Like, the talent's still there. Like, even in the ring, Sergio, like, I've covered almost every Teofimo Lopez fight of his young career, most of it live and in person. I covered him at the Olympics in Rio. That was not the same fighter. He was trying to one-punch Kambosos into the mat. Like, the Teofimo I know is a boxer puncher, somebody that, you know, hits you, moves you, and then when he gets the opportunity, just clobbers you with that big right hand. Similar to what happened with Richard Comey in their fight a few years ago. That was not the Teofimo I was used to seeing. So everything I'm hearing is that Teofimo has got his mind right. His body's going to be better at 140 pounds. I think he's in a good place right now. I have lofty expectations for Teofimo Lopez. I think within the next year, he's going to be a world champion again. And I think there's a pretty good chance, if his body allows him to stay at 140, that before he leaves that weight class, he'll be the undisputed champion. Because to your point, Top Rank is loaded in that weight class. Like, they've got Josh Taylor, who has two of the belts and will probably vacate sometime next year. They've got Jose Ramirez, who's going to fight for a belt sometime next year. They have a lot of guys that they work with. So Teofimo is going to get a million opportunities at 140.
A lot of money changes you. Overnight success changes you. You know, on a smaller or on a different level, I went through that when I won the contender, you know, from a nobody to somebody, from insufficient funds to $1 million. Teofimo went through that. And whenever you're a kid from the ghetto.
Back to insufficient funds.
No way. Come on. Thanks, American Express. We had a good day today at the market, baby. Anyway, Teofimo went through that. A lot of boxers go through that. A lot of athletes go through that, man. You cover a lot of basketball players. They're the ones that go broke before anyone else. Football players, too. Because they get a lot of money. Their life changes overnight. They don't know how to manage it. And then they start splurging. Teofimo, you know, he went through a little bit of everything. Not only personal problems, but the financial problems, too. He couldn't even hire the strength trainer that got him into that great shape because he couldn't afford it. You know? So all these things come and it's a perfect storm. But you know what? That's part of boxing. That's part of being a fighter. The reason people indirectly or vicariously live through us or admire us, whether you know you're a lawyer or a doctor or whatever you are, is because you fight your own way. You fight. You get up out of bed. You fight your for your family. You fight to get ahead in your job. Somehow, somewhere, you're fighting. Any fighter could tell you that. Boxing is the easiest thing. Training is one of the hardest things, but juggling your personal life, your family life, doing all of the promotions and marketing for the fight, and then having to, you know, show out for 12 rounds against like another guy that's equally as hungry, if not more hungrier. I mean, it's a lot of things to juggle.
It is.
And it's character that makes it all the way through the end. Look at all the fighters that have had longevity to the end. Not only are they naturally talented, but they had character, you know, and if some guys didn't have character, they're just super talented, or it was a little bit of both. But yeah, I think Teofimo, like you said, very smart young man, love talking to him, love hearing his interviews. And I think he has the character. Get it back.
I think he's going to be great at 140. Not to look past Pedro Campa, but this is a comeback fight for Teofimo. He's probably, if he's right, he's going to finish Campa in the first half of the fight. But in the last couple of days, there's been an interesting matchup floated for Teofimo, that being Ryan Garcia. You saw Oscar De La Hoya tweet over the weekend that he was going to be in Vegas for the Teofimo fight. I know, Sergio, that representatives of Top Rank and Golden Boy have spoken about a potential Teofimo against Ryan Garcia fight. Very preliminary talks right now because a lot of the same obstacles that exist between Garcia and Tank Davis in terms of networks,
are the same ones he's going to face with Teofimo.
Are the same ones, though I would argue that, you know, Top Rank has done pay-per-views with Fox before. Like that, I think Top Rank and ESPN might be more amenable to doing kind of a co-promotion, a co-pay-per-view with Golden Boy and DAZN than Showtime and PBC is with Tank Davis. That's my read of it right now, because the Tank Davis talks have really gone nowhere at this point. I mean, Oscar all due respect to Oscar, but he's the head of Golden Boy. These discussions are being had well below him. If a deal with Tank Davis gets done, it's because DAZN, Al Haymon, Lupe Valencia, the manager for Ryan Garcia, and Showtime and Steven Espinoza decide to get a deal done. Oscar's, he's out there and he's very important in these, but he's not really involved in the day-to-day of these talks. But what do you think, though? Like, hypothetically, let's say a deal can be done for Teofimo against Ryan Garcia early next year. Is that a fight you like for Ryan Garcia? Is that a fight you like for Teofimo Lopez? Is that a fight you like, period?
I would rather see Garcia versus Tank. I think Teofimo will be too physically strong and big for him.
Teofimo making his debut at 142.
I've seen him. I mean, mind you, Ryan Garcia did fill out nicely at 140. His shoulders looked big. He looked like a solid 140. But Teofimo was a huge 135 pounder. He's still a big 140 pounder. He has these shoulders, man. I mean, it looks like he's wearing shoulder pads. Have you seen him do pull-ups? And he does them like the hard way where the back of his palm is facing you. And he goes all the way to the top to like waist level. This guy doesn't do push-ups. He looks like a gymnast. He's that strong on his upper body. And we know that he can punch. It's his mind that is going to be the issue. But on the flip side of that, Ryan Garcia has been on record saying that he has issues with mental issues as well. So, I mean, it's a problem, and it's an epidemic that a lot of people are struggling with. And we're going to see more and more of that in fighting. But as far as what they do inside the ring when they're ready, I think Teofimo is just a wrong style matchup for Ryan Garcia. He throws more punches.
Who do you want to see Ryan Garcia face
Tank.
Then? All right, but if Tank can't happen, who do you want to see Ryan? Well, if he goes to 140, what's he going to do? Like, do you want to see him fight Maxie Hughes? That's what he's talking about.
And that's a fight that's going to happen anyway, so what does it matter?
It does matter. You can push back and say it's not a good fight.
Okay, it's either that or stay inactive. I don't think inactivity is the right
Sergio,
thing to go.
If they can make, if it's doable.
I'm all in for Maxie Hughes if you're Ryan Garcia. Stay busy, get another knockout.
Yes. And look, Ryan Garcia can fight Maxie Hughes if you want to in September, October, potentially. But if you can make, in the first quarter of next year, a fight between Teofimo and Garcia, yes. Do it, right? Yeah. Like,
I would love to hear Tank mention Garcia's name.
He does.
Just to call him up. I would like to hear Teofimo mention Garcia's name. That way, you know, people can start believing more than just what Ryan Garcia and Oscar De La Hoya are saying, because they're just doing their part to promote. They can call out King Kong, but it doesn't mean King Kong's looking their way. But if these guys actually mention their name, then it's kind of like, whoa, it's real now. I would love for Teofimo Lopez to be like, hey, all right, look, after I take care of this, I'm gonna look at your way. I'm going to make you an offer.
And he does.
Okay, like, and if he does it, we'll see what happens with Oscar De La Hoya and Ryan Garcia, whether they're willing
to do something. Ryan Garcia, at his press conference after the last fight, said, I want to fight Teofimo. If I can't get Tank, I want to fight Teofimo.
I would love to see that fight before Tank. I mean, Teofimo and Garcia would be a massive fight.
Wait, you want to see that instead of Tank?
I would love to see Tank, but Tank's not happening. You just said why. The Haymon, the Showtime, and everything else. But Teofimo's possible.
Maybe.
Because Bob Arum will work with Oscar De La Hoya. He has before.
Again, it's not, I mean, again, all due respect to Bob, it happens at like the Carl Moretti level. this is where these deals get done. Not to take two people too far behind the scenes here, but as you know, there are deal makers and there are figureheads within your company. And not to say Bob and Oscar aren't involved. Bob is clearly involved in everything that happens within Top Rank, but the nitty gritty gets done at the management
level.
If that fight can happen, that to me is equally as good as Ryan and Tank. Not as popular because, you know, the fan bases are big between Ryan and Tank, but that's a massive fight in the first quarter of 2022 or 2023, I should say. I'm going to the Teofimo fight on Saturday. You want to go?
Where is it?
Vegas.
Ooh, maybe.
Maybe. Saturday. Sit ringside.
Wait a minute. I mean, I had a good day in the market today. I'll go blow it on roulette.
All right. Let's move on to a fight that is happening. Announced this week, Conor Benn and Chris Eubank are going to square off in the UK. It's going to be a fight that's at a catch weight of 157 pounds. These two obviously are the sons of Nigel Benn and Chris Eubank Sr., who had two famous fights in the early 1990s. Now you get Benn, who is a welterweight, jumping up a couple of weight classes, and you have Eubank, who has been a middleweight of late, previously a super middleweight, dropping down a few pounds to 157. Let me get your thoughts on this first. I've got a few, but Conor Benn, Eubank being official, what do you make of that fight?
Revenge for his father. It's marketable. It's sellable. You can put that in a stadium, and it's going to be popular. Retribution,
O2,
Mannix.
The O2 Arena.
Retribution, Mannix. Redemption. I mean, it's revenge. It's blood. It's legacy.
It wasn't the second fight a draw between them,
yeah,
though?
Yeah, but it shouldn't have been.
Okay.
But I love the fact that Ben is so confident. I love you know, how he's knocking out people and former champions. Chris Eubanks is really good. Very, very good to beat. I mean, hard to beat. But I think at the point of where they're at, Conor, Ben is striving a lot farther, a lot faster. And I think him taking this big chance is just, he's following what Kell Brook did with Golovkin, bit off more than he can chew. What Amir Khan did with Canelo, bit off more than he can chew. And those fights, how'd they end?
Not well.
Brutal. I don't see this fight ending brutal. I could see it being a close loss for Ben. It wouldn't be that bad. But I just think Chris Eubanks will have the upper edge, not only in weight, even if they are fighting at 157 or whatever it is. Stylistically, it's a bad matchup for Ben. But I love the fact that they're doing, it's going to be a massive fight and marketable, because it's going to have the young fans that are following this young star now. And it's going to be the old school fans from the 1990s that seen their father's fight. It's going to be a big fight. So I love the fight.
I love this fight for Chris Eubank because I think he'll make 157 comfortably. And this is the biggest money fight he's probably ever going to be in. Like, this is a massive payday for Chris Eubank, unlike anything he's seen and unlike anything he will see. He'll rehydrate probably 10, 12 pounds, whatever the limit's going to be, and he'll be a big man in the ring against Conor Ben. I don't really get this fight for Conor Ben. Conor Ben is still a young guy, mid-20s at this point, who's on the prospect path. Like, he has been fighting the former champions, the washed-up veterans, the guys that you expect a young prospect to fight. Notably, Sergio, he has not faced anyone that resembles a puncher. What can Chris Eubank do? He can punch.
He can box and he can punch.
Right, but he can punch. Conor Ben can punch at welterweight, but he's going up against a guy that anyone in boxing will tell you has an iron chin. Like,
and
Chris
has faced bigger fighters.
Yes.
George Groves, James DeGale. These
lost
are bigger,
twice, but never been stopped.
But naturally big super middleweights. It's going to be a problem. Weight's going to be an issue. Even if Eubanks goes down in weight, he's lean. I don't know.
He's
if
really only going
person.
Down 3 pounds. Yeah. And somebody,
he's really big.
I know. Somebody close to Eubank told me, like, look, he easily makes that weight.
And
like, he's a natural
shape.
Athlete.
And
like, he's just
always in shape.
Yeah, but it's like kind of like natural. I don't want to compare it to LeBron, but like, he is like a physical specimen. Like, he can do whatever he wants, and his body is going to do operate accordingly. So I think this is bad news for Conor Ben. I think he might get hurt so bad. You talk with Ryan Garcia and with other guys, like, or Virgil or Ortiz, like, this to me is almost a cash out for Conor Ben.
No, man. Why
do you think differently? You just sang an aria about Conor about Virgil Ortiz not facing Terrence Crawford. Why is it okay for Conor Ben to face Chris Eubank? The money?
The money is one, of course, because this is a business. The styles and the style matchup is another thing, but the maturity. That's the main thing I want to focus on, the maturity. You listen to Conor Ben talk, you watch him fight, and he's ahead of his years. And it's not only because of his father, and it's not only what he does in the ring, but he has this confidence that most fighters learn on the job. Virgil Ortiz is still learning on the job. That's why he switched trainers, even though he's knocked out everybody. If he's not confident in 18 knockouts, nothing's going to make him confident. That just goes to show you that he's not fully matured. You know, Conor Ben, on the other hand, he's a fully matured specimen of a boxer, of a fighter. And I love watching him fight. He's a star. He's a future mega star. And if he can beat Eubanks, maybe that's why he's doing it. He's biting off a little bit more than he can chew. But if he can actually somehow win this fight, we got the next, you know, British Canelo.
I don't disagree, because
he's handsome, he knocks people out, he's articulate, and he can model everything from, you know, laptops to underwear. So he's gonna be a marketing dream.
You're doing best case scenario here. And I get that. But look at the opponents Conor Ben has faced in the last two
years. And the worst case scenario is he loses a decision. He won't get knocked out.
You don't think he gets knocked out by Eubank?
No.
You just said Eubank can punch.
Yeah, but he's not gonna get knocked out.
Okay, but look at the guys Conor Ben has faced. Sebastian Formella can't punch. Samuel Vargas can't. No, he wasn't. Sebastian Formella lost to Sean Porter and somebody else before.
One last.
Samuel Vargas, not undefeated, can't punch. Chris Algieri, due respect to our friend, can't punch. Chris Van Heerden, can't punch. Like, he has fought a lot of guys that can't punch. Now he's going up two weight classes to face a guy that can punch. I don't see the pathway to victory here.
I'm not saying it's a great idea. All I'm saying it's a calculated risk. That
So why is Virgil Ortiz, Terrence Crawford not a calculated risk?
I like this one more than Virgil Ortiz. Yes.
Well, there's more money in it. That's the only thing you can say about this matchup.
There you go. When you weigh the pros and cons, I think this is a calculated smart risk by Conor Benn. And mind you, there's legacy. There's bloodline involved. There's, like,
absolutely.
There's a story to sell. So if I had a father, I would like to revenge his loss or whatever it is. But I don't. So, you know, if I would have had someone like that in my life, that he came up short with someone else, you can bet that I would have stepped up, man. I would have taken the name to another level. Mannix, you have a dad. If your dad would have got beat by somebody, wouldn't you want to face somebody that's just a little bit bigger?
Oh, okay, but again, they fought to a draw the second time, so it's not exactly revenge.
Yeah, but
it wasn't a draw, it was a split decision loss.
It was a draw.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're overreaching here. And if Conor Benn was like 31 years old, I might agree with you, but he's 25. And Sergio, how do you think he's going to go back down to welterweight after gaining 13 pounds for this fight? He's going to drop back down to welterweight and resume his career as a top prospect there if he loses badly? This, to me, is a cash out. Simple as that. He's cashing out. He's going to make a lot of money, but this will be the end we see of Conor Benn at a high level.
Oh, you're nuts. Okay. Maybe I agree. I might give you some credit with the cash out because, like I said, this is a business. It's prize fighting. You show me the money, I'll take the risk. But no, he's not going to get knocked out. So how's it a cash out? Two, he's going to make a boatload of money. If he makes it a competitive fight and comes up short, it's still going to be a learning experience. He can drop back down in weight, or he can, you know, campaign at junior middleweight, go up in weight comfortably. He's fine. He's a good-looking, very hard-punching kid that has a big following. It all depends how he loses that fight. If he gets knocked out, okay, it was a mistake. If he goes the distance, loses a close decision, it's a win-win.
You know what was the best story behind Chris Eubank, Conor Benn, the parents in the second fight? Don King, at the time, had written into their contracts that the winner of the fight and the loser of the fight would both become part of Don King Promotions. He didn't write in a draw. So neither one of them had to join Don King, which was an amazing piece of bad lawyering, or whoever wrote that contract for Don King. All right, let's keep it over in the UK for a minute, and let's talk about Tyson Fury, who unsurprisingly is looking to get back into the ring. Fury's been on social media, and he wants to face Derek Chisora, talking about completing the trilogy against Derek Chisora. Mind you, Fury's beaten Chisora twice pretty badly. About 10 years ago was the last fight. But Fury wants Derek Chisora part three. Chisora says he wants it. From what I've been told, they are massively apart in terms of money, to the point that representatives or both have told me this fight is not going to happen. So I'll ask you this. I don't think you'll be surprised that Fury wants to get back into the ring, but what do you make of Fury calling out Derek Chisora?
It's the Gypsy King being a mastermind promoter, keeping his name in the mix, being popular. And Chisora is always in really entertaining fights, but he comes up short when it comes to fighters like Tyson Fury. He came up short twice already. He comes up short with every big name that
Chisora
he
is. Look, all respect to him for beating Kubrat Pulev, but Kubrat Pulev was as washed as Chisora.
Derek Chisora is, you always got to give him a chance against people to put up a good fight, but not to win. He's a heavyweight version of Gabe Rosado. Always in an entertaining.
That's a good comparison.
He's an entertaining, very, very liked, very popular soldier that loves going to war, but he doesn't come out with the victories or the triumphs. So when it all comes down to it, and they both have like a dozen losses, but they're the people's champ, right? But not against the real champ. You don't give them chances against the number one guy. You can give them chances against the number four or five guys or guys coming up in the mix. But no, not against Tyson Fury, especially if he's already come up short twice.
Like, I want to see Chisora, if he wants to complete the trilogy against Kubrat Pulev, more power to you. Like, that's a fine fight for Chisora. The second fight was actually pretty entertaining. Let's see that fight. If he wants to face Dillian White in a third fight. I'd be okay with that as well.
Those too.
Yeah, those are okay. I don't want to see him against the best heavyweight in the world. It doesn't make any sense. That's a way for Tyson Fury to cash a big check and not be in any danger. And that sort of fits Sergio with what Tyson's been doing since his last fight, where he's calling out, you know, Ngannou, the MMA champion. He's calling out now Derek Chisora. He's looking to do exhibitions more than he's looking to do actual competitive fights. But you and I both know Fury's future will be determined in less than 2 weeks when AJ and Usyk get in the ring together in Saudi Arabia. The winner of that fight, there will be a mandate to face Tyson Fury to become the undisputed champion at heavyweight. That's the fight I want to see Tyson Fury in. And ultimately, that's the fight he's going to take, right? Like, that's the one where the money's going to be behind it.
And yeah, and he's waiting and doing what a very smart heavyweight champion should do. Instead of staying inactive, get an easy fight against a fighter you know you'll beat easily, can get a big paycheck. And that's why he's promoting that fight. Because the longer he stays out of the ring, the more he's going to look bad against the winner of an Usyk and AJ, especially if it's Usyk because he's a master boxer. So yeah, he doesn't want all that rust to start piling up. I get why Tyson Fury's doing it. I just don't understand why, you know, promoters are considering putting that show or why fans will be interested in that type of fight, because now it's a one-sided fight. And look, it all comes down to Deontay Wilder, you know, not letting the heavyweight champion undisputed ever happen. I still go back to this. I have this bitterness, man, that you know, we didn't get to see Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury for the biggest fight in boxing. That fight would have stopped the world for one night, and it's not going to happen. Instead, we're talking about Usyk. We're talking about other fighters that are not the two biggest names. And Wilder's out of the mix now, too. It's boxing. I get it, but no. Back to your question.
We're not going to get into this, but like, have you seen the video of Usyk lately? Like, he looks like a unit.
He's huge. He looks like a tank. He looks like a tank.
I have a lot of concerns about AJ's ability to win this fight. I have a lot of concerns because Usyk looks like a real heavyweight in his most recent training pictures.
Look, if Tyson Fury, yeah, I agree with you, by the way. I think Joshua, no matter who he has in his corner, Usyk's just that damn skilled to make fighters, especially big fighters his size, to look bad. But it's gonna have to be a one punch that changes things, and where Usyk goes on the defensive, mode, and then Joshua starts to, you know, just bullying him around, and he can win a decision. I don't see him knocking out Usyk. It's gonna have to be a hard fought decision that he wins.
Last thing. You mentioned Deontay Wilder. He is reportedly set to return to the ring after a one-year layoff on October 15th. His opponent, Robert Hellenius, who is coming off back-to-back knockout wins.
I like that
wins.
Fight, Mannix.
Yeah, back-to-back knockout wins over Adam Kovnatsky. I love that fight.
Yeah.
That is the perfect comeback fight for Deontay Wilder. Hellenius has credentials. Like, he is the right guy, you know, because of those two wins over Kovnatsky. He's not some washed up guy at this point, even though he is 38 years old. And he's been knocked out before. Like, Johan Duapas knocked him out. Gerald Washington knocked him out. So if Deontay Wilder has anything left in the tank, he's going to knock out Robert Hellenius and put himself in a position for, say, an Andy Ruiz fight potentially in the first quarter of 2023. This is, you know, I know it came at the cost of Adam Kovnatsky because he lost those two fights, but this is absolutely the right matchmaker for PBC to make for Deontay Wilder. I'm not a big fan of being on pay-per-view, but this is where we are in 2023.
Beautiful matchmaking. It's going to sell. It's going to be the perfect fight for Deontay Wilder, who's coming off back-to-back losses against a guy that's coming off back-to-back wins. It's a marketable fight. Two big men with two of the best names in boxing, the Bronze Bomber and the Nordic Nightmare. Come on, they're just, you know, it's going to be the complete opposite of each other, and both of them are big guys. It's going to look good on television. People are going to want to watch, and it's a perfect style matchup for Wilder, who fights taller fighters better. I think Hellenius, he struggles with taller fighters. Duapas was 6'5", around there. He came up short with, what was the other guy that he came up short with? Gerald Washington, another huge guy, I think it was. So he doesn't do well against big fighters. I think he does better against shorter fighters. And Wilder, we know that he faced the biggest heavyweight out there in Fury. So he's gonna learn off that experience. And it's a great, great matchup that ends in a knockout. I think Wilder knocks him out.
Yeah, and look, if he does, he's right back into that heavyweight mix, into big fights. And if he doesn't, you know, we'll know. If he doesn't dominate Robert Hellenius, we'll know there's probably not a lot left. Wilder will be 37 years old a week after that fight. So
what? He cashed out. And
he did. And he did it in one of the great heavyweight trilogies of all time, if not the greatest heavyweight trilogy of all time. Like, it was a great, great series of fights with Tyson Fury. So, well, we'll see what happens in that fight. And maybe we'll see you in Vegas there, Sergey. Thinking about it, aren't you?
Hey, listen, I'm thinking about it. I had a good day in the stock market. If this week continues, I just might have to go blow it on roulette.
I can't believe you're basing your short-term future on the penny stocks that you're trading on E-Trade.
No. It's not penny stocks, my friend. And yeah, American Express had a good day. Yeah, let's go.
When we come back, my conversation with Teofimo Lopez. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. So the NFL Week 1 odds are out, and now it's time to try FanDuel Sportsbook if you haven't already. Get in on the action early this season. Right now, new FanDuel Sportsbook customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. What NFL futures bet would you make with a no-sweat bet? Pick local teams, players where applicable, go to the FanDuel Sportsbook app to find out more options. For example, can the Rams repeat at plus 1,100? Would you take Derrick Henry or Jonathan Taylor to win the rushing title? Will Kyler Murray and the Cardinals beat the 8.5 win total? Me? I'm a Patriots fan, so I'm looking at everything related to Mac Jones and the New England Patriots. Just sign up using the promo code BOXING to place your first bet, and FanDuel will give you up to $1,000 back in free bets if you don't win. There's no better place to get ready for the football season than on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook and official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up using the promo code BOXING to get started with a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's promo code BOXING. All right, Teofimo Lopez is the former 135-pound champion. On Saturday, he will take the first step towards becoming a two-division champion when he takes on Pedro Campa. That's a fight you can watch on ESPN. And Teofimo joins me here on the show. Teofimo, been a little while, man. 6-7 months. Good to see you back in the mix, my friend.
Hi, it's great to be back. And thank you for having me, for real. It's great to be back in my sport that I love. And honestly, looking forward to Saturday night, August 13th, against Pedro Campa.
So how does 140 pounds feel on you?
Oh, man, it feels amazing. It's something that has been long overdue, honestly. I think for like 2 years, I should have made this weight. I should have been on this weight already 2 years ago. But, you know, God works in mysterious ways. You know, I think I had to become world champion at 35 first to come up here. So it's just it's a great feeling overall. It's less stress on my body. And really just now we're on cruise control.
Yeah, what are you able to do differently? How is training different now that you don't have to cut those extra 5 pounds?
Honestly, I'm able to basically take more intake on protein, you know, basically eat more. Those four or five pounds is a huge difference for anyone that's in the sport of boxing or even in combat sports, they know. So it's definitely all about just making sure that we don't lose the main foundation, and that's staying conditioned, you know, and not trying to build too much muscle mass, you know, because that could also slow you down. You know, I'm a very elusive fighter, very quick twitch, and this whole turnaround really at 140 has just been amazing. This whole camp, I feel great. I feel amazing. And I really can't wait to showcase that on Saturday night on ESPN.
So along those lines, like, compare how you are feeling physically now to how you were feeling physically going into the last fight against Kambosos.
Physically, I would say this time around, rather than from the Kambosos, I don't feel as dry, so to speak. My body doesn't feel as dry. I don't feel, and I don't feel too, I'm less injuries, so to speak, you know, and I think that's a huge major factor for me as to, you know, combat sport. I mean, there's so much contact that we do. So I try to go in the fight as close as possible to 100%, you know, and sometimes it doesn't really happen. Especially at 35, you know, I was breaking down my body, a lot of wear and tear, you know, and I think the huge factor and the difference now is that I don't have to really worry about that. My body's starting to realize that we're not going to go down to 35, you know, we're going to stay at 140 and just work our way and build up from there.
Yeah, I was on with Max Kellerman the same day that you were last week, and he was asking me about, you know, what do you expect from Teofimo? I said, look, I think Teofimo at his best is probably the best at 140. Like, he is really good. He's still at the top of his game. What I'm curious about with Teofimo going into this fight is going in healthy, going in physically right, going in mentally right. Because, you know, being around you before the Kambosos fight, and I've been around you for a lot of your fights early in your career, going back to the Olympics, I mean, you had a lot going on in your personal life going into the Kambosos fight. It didn't feel like you were mentally all the way there going into that fight. Has that stuff been resolved in your life as you go into this fight?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Mannix. I mean, everything happens for a reason. You know, God works in mysterious ways. And I, like I said before, and I love it. I'm truly grateful for the journey that I'm actually going through right now. You know, it's great to fail, because in during those times is when you really get to know yourself more. You know, you get to know how bad do you really want this, you know? Does it break you or does it make you, you know? And I can't really wait to honestly showcase that to you all, you know, and see the, not just a different type of where I'm at mentally. It's more so to see and let you guys see, how I really am in physical form, you know? And I think that's going to be the major key to where I become a two-time, two division weight world champion. So all those things really is what I'm really looking forward to, becoming undisputed once again and just shooting for high expectations for everything, you know, becoming the greatest of my era, you know, not just the, you know, I came back into this, you know, I'm already great. I just came back to add the EST at the end.
you hadn't spent any time with your son before that Kambosos fight. What's it like having spent this time and being a father?
Oh, it's amazing. Honestly, my life has definitely changed because of it. And I honestly believe to everyone out there, having a child, having a kid is honestly a blessing from the heavens above, you know? And I think that we really got to be more considerate about that. It's changed my perspective immensely and about how I need to carry myself moving forward. What do I want to do? You know, it's not about, yes, the takeover is all about, we're going to take over the sport. We're going to do what we do, be number one. However, it's more so now, since I have my son, it's about leaving so much behind for him that he knows how to structure when he gets of age. So it's definitely changed everything for me. And it's also influenced me more to even instill that in other people's children.
You know, you, as we talked about, kind of, you weren't all the way right going into the Kambosos fight. I know that fight was delayed multiple times, and you just wanted to get out there. You wanted to get through that fight and get past it, as opposed to having another delay down the line. But as you look back, do you regret going through with that fight?
No, not at all. It's made me who I am today. I had to go through that, and God made sure of it. You know, I had to go through near death experience to really understand my values as a human being and as a person, and what am I here for in this sport? You know, what am I here for in this world, really? You know, I'm just grateful that you even have a voice and to have people even come out to listen, you know, and it's all about finding the right tunes to everyone. You know, this really has definitely changed my life in a much positive way. And I thank God every day for it. You know, I thank him because back, you remember in the Olympics, it was so much corruption in 2016. I mean, but we don't need to touch in on that. However, it's because of that failure, I became the second youngest undisputed champion in boxing history, you know, after that failure. So I'm just excited to see what this failure is going to bring onto me for more of my successes, really.
You know, that's a great perspective because, yeah, you got screwed over, I think, a couple of times in the Olympic cycle and then exit in that first round. And you took that and you were not one of the most celebrated signings coming out of the Olympics, but you quickly became the most successful guy coming out of the Olympics. And so you're saying kind of you use that experience as motivation and you'll use this most recent experience of failure as motivation.
Absolutely. That's the only way a true champion looks at, he should look at adversity and at life. You know, when you go through failure, it's not saying that you suck, but that's the first step to success, you know, and you really got to change your narrative, you know, and you see all the greats. I mean, they've all talked about it, from the Michael Jordans to Kobe Bryant to even to Tiger Woods and all these guys from all different sports. They really talk about their failures is what made them great. And that's really what I'm here to put on, too. That's why we call it the take back, the takeover. And it's really just I want to be up there as well with them. And I will.
You talked about kind of what the medical issue that was revealed after the fight. Has that been resolved? Are you comfortable medically going into this fight?
Absolutely. I'm definitely in a much better place physically now. You know, no more injuries. Thankfully, you know, coming into this fight, I believe I'm about like 90% in healthy. So, you know, and that is very high. It's a high ratio for me, especially. So you are going to see the Magdaleno type of performance mixed with the Mason Menard performance mixed with so many other things that, you know, everyone is just going to, it's just an eye candy performance that I'm really going to put out. You know, I'm a performer at the end of the day, and I'm here to really show and let everyone know, you know, I am the guy. You know, I'm not someone that is just here for a moment. You know, I'm here to stay forever. And it's really just those things, the complications that I had, you know, it's great. It's great that we're working on that now. And I know that a lot of it had to do because of the weight class at 135. I know that for a fact. And I'm just grateful now because I had to learn from that to not stay longer than I need to when my body's telling me it's time to move. So now it's just all about listening to my body and just moving forward from there.
When you watched Devin Haney beat Kambosos, what went through your mind?
I didn't watch the fight. I was actually in New York City during the time, and I was riding a bike. I was riding one of those city bikes and just listening to music. Because, you know, honestly, I kind of figured I know that if I'm in the sport of boxing, then you got to know the business of the sport of boxing. And honestly, I already knew that Haney was going to win. So there's no point in watching something that I'm either going to fall asleep watching or just know that I already know the end result. So it's no point. I'd rather go and connect more with life, really. Hmm.
If Kambosos, one way or the other, moves up to 140, does a rematch interest you?
Yeah, for sure, definitely. That's definitely something that'll definitely come around, you know, and this time around, he won't, you know, I won't be the one dying. He'll be the one feeling that, so... You know, I look forward for him moving up to 140. I think that's the best shot that he really has, though, to stay relevant, because Devin Haney's going to beat him again. And honestly, no one's going to care about Kambosos. So he's going to have to move up at 140. And I'll gladly take that fight, you know. However, I'm focused on all these world title belts. So in the meantime, just focusing on my main goal right now, looking great August 13th, and then we'll go from there.
I spent some time, Teo, around Virgil Ortiz last week, and he had a rough year kind of as well. A lot of critics, a lot of doubters after he pulled out of that fight against Michael McKinson, and he said it was a hard year for him, and he used all that going into that fight he had this past weekend, used the criticism. Does that fuel you going into a fight like this?
No, it used to. It used to, I would say. It used to fuel me. Now it's more so about just it feels that doesn't fuel me. What fuels me is knowing that I am that. I am who I always said I am. And honestly, is the best entertainer fighter in the game, you know? And I think that's just really what fuels me more than ever, you know, just basically putting on for God, you know, representing him mainly. You know, I'm a child of God, and I just focus on just performing at my best just so that he could see that, you know? you know, and when after my fight, I'm gonna grant him and thank him for everything that he has done in my life. And hopefully, you know, it could tap into all those kids around the world, you know, put some light in everybody and just move forward.
You and your father have had a lot of success together as fighter and trainer. But when things go wrong, people wonder, will the fighter make changes? And changes usually means in the corner. Was there any thought in your mind about either bringing someone in to work with your father, replacing your father? What was your mindset there?
No. It's a dynamic duo, man, to the wheels fall off. You know, me and my father, I had so many people call me and text me afterwards. I mean, people that smile in front of my father's face, you know, and give him a pat on the back and just say, hey, you should leave him and come to our side. You know, and I'm like, you know, I don't want to be rude and say that I know everything because I don't. You know, I'm still learning to this day, you know, and that's the greatest thing that I could say about life and what I do in my craft. You know, my father, though, is the one that really, he knows me best. He's seen me at my worst. He's seen me at my best, you know, and he's going to be the one that definitely is going to tell me the things that I really need to focus on how can I beat this guy. I trust him. I trust him with my life. And honestly, it's really just focusing. Honestly, I didn't need or want a assistant coach for this fight. You know, we had talks of other people that wanted to come in and maybe do some collaborations with that would have made it would have caught more eyes. You know, however, I'm someone that is I'm loyal to the T, you know, and I just want everyone to see that, you know, my father didn't become trainer of the year just by luck. You know, in 2020, you know, we beat the most decorated fighter pound for pound during that time, Vasily Lomachenko. That was from him. You know, he told me how the game plan had to go. So I just really want to give my father his flowers, especially for this fight, and let it be known to everyone out there that man is always going to be in my corner. And if anyone got something to say about it, you can meet me in that ring.
Yeah, your father, I mean, it's what have you done for me lately, isn't it? I mean, like, your father is the guy that was guiding you through Richard Comey, through Vasily Lomachenko, the best year of your professional career. And mm-hmm. You know, now it's, you know, one loss and everybody's looking to...
It's like, I'll say this, Mannix, that's the problem with today's... I don't want to say with everything, but that's the problem with today's world. You know, just because you have one defeat doesn't mean that you got to go and switch up, you know? Just because something goes wrong or whatever doesn't mean that you just got to forget where it started. You know, I think that's what people don't really tap into. I don't need to... And the thing is, with all these other trainers... I'm sorry, they don't know shit about boxing, a majority of them. And if anything, they just want to grasp onto me and say that they built something like that. You know, what better way, right, Mannix, to try to train somebody else when they're coming back in a comeback fight, knowing the fighter's determined to want to win this, right, and needing to win this, and then take credit for it, you know, say that they made me and they did this. I'm not one to have that, you know, and I don't want to teach these coaches how I actually think and how I actually move. You know, if you're not on the same pace with me, you're wasting my time. And I see that with a lot of coaches. And what does a main ego coach do? They try to stimulate your style into their style. And what happens is that the whole time you're focusing on trying to perfect their style that you're not really thinking in the ring. And that's the thing that a lot of these fighters, because they're not educated enough, they don't really tap into that. They're just like, okay, I got to go over here because I lost. No, you don't. You just got to go back to the drawing board and stay loyal to the team that started with you.
No question. And look, you're now in a position with Top Rank having a lot of those top fighters at 140 pounds. Like, you'll get that title shot very quickly, I'm assuming. I'm guessing that in those discussions with Top Rank, there are big opportunities immediately ahead of you.
Absolutely. You know, I know that the vacant belts right now are somewhat, I guess, already taken. So, you know, Josh Taylor is still talking about getting married and all this other stuff. I honestly, we can make that fight happen. You know, I try to make the fight happen with Cattaro and stuff like that. However, you know, as we can see, you know, I really don't have no say right now. You know, this was a Top Rank executive move. And it kind of makes me feel some type of way, but I understand, you know, I'm a fighter to the day I die. And I'm someone that definitely loves to take every challenge and every fight, you know, and I don't duck no fight. So, you know, but it kind of made me realize how do I come back to take over and set the tone Saturday night, August 13th against Pedro Campos when it starts.
Well, it's good to have you back, Teo. Boxing's better with you in it. Hope to see you in big fights very soon. Thanks for joining me, man.
It's hard to be humble when you're as great as I am.
When we come back, this week's picks brought to you by FanDuel. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a six-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last two decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time now for this week's picks brought to you by our friends over at FanDuel. And yes, the hot streak continued last week. Not the most difficult fight to predict, I'll grant you. But I told you to bet Virgil Ortiz, he won. I told you to bet Virgil Ortiz by knockout, and even though it got a little bit tricky in there for him, he wound up stopping Michael McKinson in the ninth round of his fight. So hope you bet. Hope you got rich. The big fight this weekend, Teofimo Lopez against Pedro Campa. Again, this is not a fight with great odds because for Lopez, it is a comeback fight. It is supposed to be a fight that he wins relatively easily. Right now, he is at minus 3,000, according to FanDuel. That's not a great number, but it's almost a mortal lock that Teofimo Lopez wins this fight against Campa, who has never really fought anyone on the level of Lopez. The odds get a little bit better when you're looking at method of victory. Lopez is minus 410 to win by knockout. I think he's coming into this fight with something to prove. He's got a chip on his shoulder in the aftermath of the loss to Kambosos. Campa, he just doesn't have the firepower to keep Lopez off him. I think Lopez is at a better camp. I think things are settled down in his personal life. I think he comes out and makes a statement in his return, knocks out Pedro Campa. So take Teofimo Lopez to win. Take him to win by knockout. Those are my picks. Brought to you by FanDuel. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Sergio Mora and Teofimo Lopez for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Spotify,
Apple Podcasts, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.